Blog Talk Radio.
Our life to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're rooting, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
Fans, this is Rope-A-Dope Radio. I am your host, Chris Carlson. Tonight on the show, we have a heavyweight contender, Seth Mayhem Mitchell. He's got a big, big fight coming up on Showtime June 22nd. It's a rematch fight where he took his first loss, so lots to talk about there. Of course, that's going to be at the Brooklyn Barclays Center. It's going to be the co-feature for Broner and Malignaggi. So that'll be very interesting. I think he's going to have to play bodyguard at those weigh-ins and pressers, that's for sure. So obviously, tons to talk about from last weekend. Alvarado Rios, the rematch, phenomenal rematch. You know, a lot of times when you have such a great fight, it just doesn't, it's tough. It doesn't live up, you know, to the first fight. It's, I'm not going to say impossible, because we've seen it happen, or at least shocking things happen in a second fight. The Marquez-Vasquez, all three fights were fun. Actually, technically all four were. I just don't think Vasquez was, you know, his face wasn't ready for that fourth one. But, you know, the fact that it lived up to such a great fight, and the fact that Alvarado was hurt in that second round. I mean, if you look at the first and second round, especially the second round, you're thinking, man, you know, this might actually end quicker than the first one, and a lot of people said that Rios was actually going to stop him earlier. So we'll recap that fight. We'll talk about, you know, what people are thinking about the rematch. You know, should they go right to it? It sounds like they're not going to go right to it. It sounds like they'll probably, you know, go back to it later in the year. We'll also recap that Monte Carlo, I think they call it the Million Dollar Super 4 tournament. It's basically it's kind of interesting. It's a It had Golovkin and Ishida in the main event. It had five fights on a pay-per-view card. It was put on by Integrated Sports Pay-Per-View, who usually has pretty solid cards, you know, compare it to the rest of pay-per-view cards. They do a pretty good job. It was only $25 for the pay-per-view. But anyway, Golovkin, you know, stayed busy and actually did more than stay busy. He stopped Ishida, a guy that hadn't been stopped yet, and the tourney is a four-man tourney, right? But it's a super middleweight fight that was won by Edwin Rodriguez, and then a light heavyweight fight so that was won by Grachev. So kind of interesting that they're going to meet at a catchweight later in the summer. Kind of a fun idea. Also, a big fight we'll recap a little bit about over in Liverpool, England. A big young star, or star on the rise, I should say, you know, had a little issues over there. We'll talk about that. And, of course, you know, we'll look forward to this weekend. We'll recap, you know, what else happened last weekend and also what's on the schedule this weekend. HBO 2 has an afternoon show. Zhu Shiming is from China, their first gold medalist, multi-gold medalist, I believe. He's making his pro debut. And there's some good fights, actually, underneath it. I think the best will be Diego Maldonado versus Rocky Martinez for his WBO junior lightweight belt. That's what I think will be the best fight on that card. Valero is on that card as well. He's got the WBA and WBO flyweight. He had a great year last year. And like I said, just look at the rest of the fight schedule. And the news, of course, there's a ton of news to talk about. A lot of fights are being talked about. I talked about Golovkin. He scored a great, great knockout. It sounds like him and Matt Macklin, which would be that, you know, top five-ish guy at middleweight, a real live middleweight that's been in there with a variety of guys. I think it would be a nice, nice test for him. It sounds like on the East Coast, a triple header on HBO, June 29th is what they're looking at. So we'll talk about that. Also, Mayweather versus Guerrero, the undercard is finalized. We'll talk about that. Another big fight, Berto and Soto Carras, Jesus Soto Carras. We'll talk about that undercard as well. That's going to be in July. It sounds like they're trying to make that work. So there's a ton of to talk about in general, a lot of fights that have been made. And also, you know, just some news. UFC boxing championships are going on. Definitely keep you updated on some of that. Boxing Scene and a couple other websites do a really good job of daily reports, or at least every other day reports. And we'll also talk about last week with Lamont Peterson and that whole issue that came out that was, you know, really poorly handled by some members of the media. They did a really, really poor job with that story and ended up, you know, putting something out there that wasn't true really early. So a lot of people still don't know what the heck's going on with that situation. So there's a lot to talk about. But right about now, we want to go ahead and bring in our first guest of the night, Seth Mitchell. What's going on, Seth, man? How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir, and I appreciate you taking time out. Definitely, you know, obviously got a big, big fight coming up. You know, just got officially scheduled now on Showtime, June 22nd at the Barclays Center. The big rematch with Jonathan Banks. It'll be a lot of people are intrigued to watch this fight. And, you know, just on a lighter note, Seth, you might have to play bodyguard at some of these pressers in the weigh-in, man, because Broner and Malignaggi, you're going to have to be close, man.
Oh man, yeah, it's gonna be a lot of action before the fight. But one thing we pretty much sure is gonna be a lot of action in the ring. But it's gonna be interesting. I'm excited about that fight, and I'm definitely excited about my fight.
Definitely, man, and it is gonna be very, very funny to kind of sit back and entertain. That for sure. And, you know, you fought in some nice venues. You've been recently having a nice home there in Atlantic City, fighting several times now. Brooklyn, you know, Barclays Center, it's really starting to get going. They had a nice crowd for the B-Hop crowd. They're expecting another one here at the end of the month. And then, obviously, having Malignaggi and Broner at the top of that card, your co-feature. And how excited are you to go to Brooklyn and actually, you know, get in this Barclays Center, something that is looking like potentially the East Coast will really benefit from this, fighters, fans, and everybody?
I'm very excited. I haven't fought there. I haven't been there, but I heard it's definitely a nice arena, and it's a nice place to fight. The crowd and the atmosphere is going to be crazy. So I'm excited about it, but, you know, I'm mostly excited that I got the rematch, and it's back on a big time network, you know, such as Showtime. So I'm excited about that, and I'm just ready to go out there and do what I do and put on a good performance for the fans, but for a different outcome this time.
Yeah, and we'll definitely get into some of the details of that fight and maybe some of the other things you know are thinking about adding in camp or just working on or you know whatever, but. You know, coming off that loss, how important, Seth, is having that inner circle? You know, obviously the inner circle, we've had you on several times on your way up to what you want to do, and that ultimately is getting that title and bringing it back to the U.S. But, you know, you've had to rely on it because of your situations in the past with some injuries and switching careers and trying something kind of out of left field, and obviously currently with off your first defeat, how you know important is an inner circle to keep you focused, to not let you get too down, to look for you know brighter things and just get it off your mind?
The inner circle is very important. I mean, it's huge. You know, I can't can't stress enough how important it is. Like I've always said numerous times, the people that I have around me, you know, a lot of them I knew, you know, before boxing. And they care about Seth Mitchell. They don't care about Mayhem. They don't care about boxing. You know, they want me to succeed in whatever endeavor, you know, that I go into. They want me to be successful and they want me to succeed. But they care about Seth Mitchell as a man. And, you know, so it's easy. And I think, you know, me as a person, I'm an individual that, of course, I want to succeed, but I try to do things the right way. I'm very humble. I don't believe that, you know, I'm invincible. And I think I believe in myself, but I'm not cocky. I think when you live like that and you approach, you know, situations like that, you can handle success when it comes and you can also handle failure, you know, when it comes. And I think that's just been very important in helping me, you know, get over, you know, my loss and not let it, you know, mentally, you know, derail me or doubt myself. I'm not saying that that loss hurt. I don't want people to think that, oh, you know, I lost. Oh, well, it was just a loss. No, that loss hurt. It took me about a good strong week to really get over it. I didn't want to eat anything. You know, I couldn't appreciate, you know, the finer things of life, such as, you know, my kids. I've got two healthy kids. The only thing that was on my mind was that loss. So it hurt, but, you know, I got over it, and but not once did I doubt myself. Did I say, oh, do I want to do this? You know, it just made me, you know, more focused, and not saying that I wasn't focused going into the first fight, but it just made me a better fighter. And, you know, I can say whatever I want to say, but until I go out there on the 22nd and prove it and show people that, you know, I'm a better fighter, you know, then people are going to say what they want to say. They're going to say this and they're going to say that, but it doesn't bother me at all. I know what I'm made of. I know that this fight has made me a better fighter, and on June 22nd, you'll see that.
Well, we've seen plenty of, you know, Hall of Famers, not just, you know, guys that went on to get titles, but Hall of Famers, you know, take a loss, come back, and jump right back on it. And, you know, you said, you know, like you said, the naysayers and all that. Are you a type of guy that reads the press clippings and then gets inspired and helps you drives you? Or are you the type to kind of stay away, stay focused, and just worry about what you're doing?
For the most part, the latter. You know, not saying that I do tons of interviews and tons of, like, you know, stuff that can be on, you know, the media, radio shows and things of that nature. And I don't necessarily go out and look for them and read them. If somebody presented to me, hey, it's like, hey, go read this or this, I might read it. But for the most part, I didn't really, you know, read a lot of stuff that I say. Sometimes I check over just to make sure I'm not misquoted. But even if I read it, I understand that it's a business and people are saying what they're saying because of what I've been doing. And I don't let it get to my head. My success doesn't make me better than this person or that person. And that's just how I look at it. And I think that's why I'm able to, you know, handle, you know, my situation a lot easier, because whatever happens, I'm blessed. You know, win, lose, or draw, I'm truly blessed. You know, I definitely want to win. And I'm a winner. And that's just what I believe. I believe in myself. And there's no doubt in my mind that on June 22nd that I'm not going to be victorious.
Well, and speaking of June 22nd, the rematch right away, you know, many of fighters and promoters, for that matter, would have brought you back down to something of a level that would probably be beneath you, maybe some stiffs just to get your confidence back. Seth, why go right back into a rematch with a lot of risk? Of course, there's a lot of reward as well. Why go back to the rematch? Is it something that you want to prove to yourself, prove that you're a real contender, not just one of these, you know, big football players / athletes switching sports? Why go right back to it, Seth? Do you feel like there was enough maybe in that first and second round that shows you that you were the one that made the mistake? Why go right to it, Seth? What was your thought process behind that between, you know, you and your team and your promoter?
I mean, I said, you know, from, you know, day one that I got to a certain level, I want to be in a position where stakes are high. And this is I'm not fooling myself. I'm not fooling nobody. This is definitely a high-stakes fight. And I'm not proven it to myself. I don't think Jonathan Banks is better than me. You know, he beat me, yes, and I didn't make excuses. I didn't say, you know, I was out of shape or, you know, it was a long layoff or I didn't, people even said that, you know, he had Emmanuel Stewart was there with him in the ring and, you know, he had a lot of emotion going into the fight. It was kind of death, and I didn't even, you know, use that because if I didn't stress him in the first or second round, people would have said, oh, he shouldn't even have been taking the fight. His trainer just passed. He had trained Klitschko. He was doing too much. So I didn't make any excuses. I just said, do it again. That's just the type of person that I am. You know, and I don't feel that I dominated him. I won the first round. I was winning the second round. And then until I, you know, got caught. And then when I went back and looked at it, it was some of the things that I was doing in the first round, I did in the second round. He just didn't capitalize on it. So, I mean, hey, this is boxing. I want to fight, you know, the best. I feel that I'm not too far away from a title shot. And, you know, that's just the type of person I am.
Well, it says a lot about you, Seth. And we're here live on Ropadope Radio with heavyweight contender Seth Mitchell. Got a huge fight coming up on Showtime here soon, June 22nd at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York. His rematch with Jonathan Banks. You can follow him on Twitter at SethMayhem48. And, you know, talking about, you know, nutshell, the fight, there was two rounds. You know, you started out patient. You're pumping that jab. And it seemed like early on you were bothering him. You touched him a little bit, and you were still patient. But then after that, like you just previously mentioned a little bit, kind of maybe go in a little bit more detail. It did look like you may have kind of reached a little bit too much there, maybe because you were touching him, because you definitely were, and also kind of fell in a little bit, squared up. Talk about, you know, some of, like you said, the positives and the strengths, because I did see you come up there pumping that jab and were patient. And it looked like you were taking your time until maybe you saw something and that you felt like you had to take advantage of, you know, of it. Seth, take us through those first two rounds and kind of just tell us, you know, what the positives and the negatives, what was going on there, because there was plenty of positives as well. You just made a couple mistakes.
Right. Well, the positives, like you said, I definitely was touching them, you know, with my jab, and I was cutting the ring off well. And I was making him use energy, you know, but he was moving a lot. And, you know, but I was still able to hit him with some good body shots. I hurt him twice. I ain't going to say hurt, dazed him twice in the first round. And I, you know, still in rush and then coming out in the second round, you know, more of the same thing. I was, you know, touching him with, you know, a nice power jab and hit him with a couple of good body shots. And then, you know, it's not that I said, okay, I'm about to go in here and finish him, but, hell, that's what my action said. And I just lunged and I reached. And even in the first, if you go back in the first round, I was lunging and I was reaching, and he just didn't count. And one time he countered and he just missed me, you know, and he caught me in the second round at a shot that you don't see coming. And when your legs are just so spread apart and you're off balance, you know, you go down, and then, you know, he did what he was supposed to do. He didn't let me tie him up. He stepped back and he threw punches. But the positives was that I definitely, you know, he definitely felt my power. He felt my jab. I hurt him twice. And the negatives is just that I was lunging and reaching, and you definitely can't do that against a counterpuncher.
And you talked about how it really, a loss like this did hurt you. You talked about your inner circle. Speaking of the loss, the knockdown, how did you feel when you were, you know, when you were done? Did you feel any kind of lingering effects? And then how long did it take you to get back in the gym, Seth?
Oh, I mean, I was fine right after, you know, right after the fight. You know, when the ref stopped the fight, you know, I didn't want the fight to be stopped, but I can't be mad at the ref. Anytime you get knocked down three times in one round, most of the time, they're going to stop the fight. So there's no argument for me there. But as far as, like, feeling, like, query or weary after the fight, anything, I was fine mentally and physically right after the fight. And I just stayed away from boxing for about 2 weeks. And then actually, it was 17. I was back in the gym December 1st. So I fought November 17th, and I was back in the gym December 1st.
Okay. Well, that's good, man. That's really good. That's key, man, just to get right back on it. And
I'll tell you what, I mean, it says a lot about you that you're willing to go right back into it, and it shows you that you're here to really prove something, and obviously there is a risk, but there's a big reward, because to all those naysayers, you can really jump right back on your plan, and your plan was definitely working. You know, you had some good, solid fights, good, solid performances, and I just want to wish you luck June 22nd. Thanks a lot, Seth, for coming on, and hopefully we'll have you on, you know, another time to see how camp is going before the fight.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you.
All right, man. You take it easy.
You too, brother.
All right, guys. That was heavyweight contender Seth Mitchell. You've seen him on the way up. We've definitely heard from him several times. You know, he's been very accommodating for Rope-A-Dope Radio. Really appreciate Seth. And it's tough. I mean, name me all these guys out there that would go right back into this rematch, you know. You just don't see it. Not just that, but maybe a guy, his heart is telling him right away he wants to do that, right? But then his promoter and his team tell him no, and they talk him out of it, you know. But to go right back to this fight, that's a big, big, big statement. And, you know, it says a lot about Seth, no doubt about it. And, you know, I'm sure he's fighting that football athlete stereotype, because we see it a lot. You know, athletes, and especially football players, you know, pro players from other sports do have a tendency to try to get in, you know, to boxing, because they see what Manny Pacquiao and Mayweather and some of those old heavyweights from the 90s and early 2000s, they saw what they were making, you know. But, you know, that's huge. The fact that he got back in the gym so quick as well, that's pretty good. And I'm going to go ahead and open up the caller. You know, I'm having a little, just want to make sure I got this right here, because it was giving me a little issue right when I opened the switchboard. The chat and everything kind of just went down there for a second. I'm just going to take a second here. All right, so obviously, you know, if you're just tuning in, I'm seeing some people joining us. We were just in the interview of heavyweight contender Seth Mitchell. Had a lot, you know, a lot to say. He definitely, you know, made some mistakes. But, you know, it won't be the first guy, if he can, you know, right the wrong, to get back in there. I mean, it's not the end of the world. But this is an important fight, and, you know, to go right back to it, we'll see. We'll see if that ultimately becomes, you know, I can't say his downfall, because, you know, if he can't beat Jonathan Banks, then maybe he's topping out right now. You know, maybe that's what he'll find out. To me, you know, this one's tough, because I definitely did see that he was doing some things in there. You know, he was doing some positive things in there. And, you know, I just think that he could have, I don't know. It's going to be a tough one. Let's put it that way. And I got to say, I know I'm kind of stuttering for words here, but, all right, there we go. I got that figured out. But it's interesting, man. And like I said, a lot of promoters, a lot of teams, just everything, you know, wouldn't have let their guy go back in there. But it says a lot, and, you know, he's not in the sport just to make some money or say this, that, and the other. Like he said, he's still humble. He's just not worried about it, you know. This is what he came to do, and he's not here to fight stiff. So, you know, they built him nicely for a while. Then they started stepping him up slowly but slowly, and now he's at a level where, you know, he has to beat this guy if he's ever going to get a title. So you might as well, I suppose, go back to it too. So, you know, I can see it, I guess, but I sure as hell wouldn't do that. But, you know, that says a lot about him. Says a whole lot about him. Let's get into it, man. The rematch, and a couple other people calling. Go ahead and press 1, call 646-381-4990. Anybody in the chat, I'm having some issues opening this thing. I mean, actually, I can get it open, but then it just freezes up and it doesn't stay open. So I'm not really sure exactly what's going on there. But either way, well, there we go. It opened up. I see some people dropped out of it, though. That's all right, though. I mean, let's get to this, man. The rematch, Alvarado and Rios. You know, I mean, just going into this fight, you look at the experts. And the experts are Vegas and obviously members of the press, what other boxers and promoters and trainers were saying. And that's who we go off of, you know, for the experts, for the picks. And if you look at Vegas, 4-1. He was a 4-1 underdog, Alvarado. And, you know, going into this fight, I thought that he could make not necessarily a major adjustment, just a minor adjustment, some stuff that he was already doing in the first fight, but just adding subtle things. And I thought he did a great job of mixing that in, the subtle things. You know, he didn't. It's not like he didn't sit there and trade at times either. He was plenty active and landing plenty of punches too. He wasn't just sticking and moving. And in fact, when he was on the move, like too much and going backwards, that's actually when he would get himself backed into a rope and then really taking advantage of. And he'd end up losing those rounds or making rounds tighter than they had to be. Really, you know, it was a good competitive fight, back and forth. Rios looked great, really solid in the first round, both of them did, but really I thought, you know, he looked pretty good. But the second round, I mean, he looked great in the second round and stumbled him off his power jab, the power jab that, you know, put Acosta down as well, and has stumbled, you know, previously other fighters as well. But for Alvarado to get knocked out in the first meeting, okay, and then to look that hurt, and he really got stood up, stumbled, staggered, whatever you want to say, a couple times in that round, that second round in the rematch fight. For him to come out of that hole and to win this fight, what an accomplishment. And I really think that, kind of like what we were saying as far as this is how he'd be able to win it, and he wasn't necessarily on the move a lot. It was the subtle movements. It was the combo shots at a good distance, and when it got close, at times, just a minor clinch, but only after you've delivered your shots with accuracy and power. So therefore, it doesn't really look like you're just holding. Not to say that he held a lot, because he didn't, but I really like what he did with the subtleties of the clinch and the movement. Now, like I said, when he was like in full-on outbox, you know, trying to outbox and move, and kind of moving backwards, he did at times get in trouble with that, and you could see him kind of readjust and go, you know, more step aside and kind of reset, get his punches off, step aside, reset, move a little bit, just the subtle movements. That's when he was at his best in the first fight, keeping that distance, not allowing Rios to get on the inside, which I thought he did a great, great job at. And, you know, this was a hell of a fight. A hell of a fight, and let's hit up the callers right now. Steven, man, I'll tell you what, talking to you, you know, last week, you did say, you know, we covered the Abril fight a bit and how he was able to be outboxed, and, you know, a couple of people called in last week saying that it's not impossible, you know, for him to be outboxed like that, and the fact that he wasn't this 4-1 underdog, and Rios can be outbox. It's just a matter of, can he stick to it the whole time, not get into too many brawls? Because, you know, the rounds that he did lose, he was either trying to brawl and staying inside too much, or, you know, on the outside a little too much, and he walked himself into the rope when he would try to be on the move, you know, overly, like way too much at times. I found that he finally found that great in-between. What did you think of Alvarado winning this fight? And the fact that, like I mentioned earlier, coming off a knockout loss, your first loss of your career, and then after that second round, I mean, he did not look good at a couple of different times. Like I said, he stood him up. He stumbled. He staggered him. The power jab. I mean, he looked pretty bad after that second round, Stephen. What did you think of Alvarado pulling this thing out, but yet still trading with him at times? He found that perfect in-between where he was busy, but he wasn't just brawling.
Well, and I think it speaks for his warrior heart a little bit. You know, when to get, you know, after you've been knocked out by that guy, to come back, get stunned by him again. You know, it'd be easy for a normal guy to just say, well, here we go again, and start cowering, start running, start, you know, something, go into safe mode. And he didn't do that, you know. I was impressed. He made adjustments. And, you know, good boxers are able to adjust in a fight. And he did what he made the adjustments he needed to. And he started finding that right hand and that big right hand. And the difference is, you know, Rios has God-given punching power, and Rios has a God-given chin. But as far as technical things that it looks like he's worked on to me, I'm not impressed. And because when that right hand started landing from Alvarado, there was no adjustment. I saw no adjustment whatsoever from Rios. All he knows how to do, or it looks to me like, is he only knows how to do one thing. He's like Margarito. I'm going to come forward. I'm going to throw punches. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to use my iron chin, and I'm just going to keep coming. And that's all I know how to do. And when he gets into a situation with a guy who you know, can find an answer for that with a little bit of movement or a little bit of whatever, and Alvarado did, he had no answer for it. He just it looked like it, after what about the I don't know, fourth or fifth round. After that, it looked like Groundhog Day. You know, it was just, it was the same thing over and over again. And it was beautiful, really. I mean, he did what he had to do to beat Rios. I thought it was a great fight. I was glad to see some boxing skill involved and not just a, you know, an all out, let it go because had that happened, I think it would have ended the same as the first one. But, very impressed with Alvarado. You know, he did what he needed to do, and whatever he did to realize, I don't know if he saw something in tape, if he realized that right was going to start landing, that he could land that at will. And once he started doing that, there was just no answer from Rios. And so I was very, very impressed, surprised, but also impressed. And you know, to talk about another fight this weekend, I just have one question for you, Chris. Do you speak Lithuanian?
I do not speak Lithuanian.
That was the line of the weekend, I thought, man, when the guy's promoter, I think, I guess that was his promoter on Friday Night Fights, asked the ref, do you speak Lithuanian? Maybe it's just me, but it cracked me up. I don't know. Did you see that?
No, I know what you're talking about. My recording got a little messed up from that, on that, but I know what you're talking about there. But I didn't get to see all the action from that card. It kind of pissed me off.
Oh, well, that sucks. It was an okay fight. I wasn't terribly impressed by Vera, and I didn't really like the stoppage. But, you know, you saw the ref. He asked him, and you know, can you see? And the guy says, not real good, or his interpreter says, not real good, or somebody in the corner said it, and you know, the ref's got to do what he's got to do, you know, when he hears that. So I don't blame him. But anyway, I thought that was kind of probably the most amusing thing about the fight was what happened afterwards when the promoters, you know, got on the ref. So anyway.
No, you're right, though. You're right about that. I did see that part for sure. And, you know, what's the ref going to do? I mean, there was a lot of controversy behind that. And people were saying, oh, you know, they should have let it go. But, I mean, there was obviously something lost in the translation, sure. But, you know, what are you going to do? You know, I don't know. That did suck, though. But as far as the whole card, I didn't really get to see a lot of the card because it kept going in and out. And it was, like, partially recorded. And it was just kind of I don't know what the hell happened. But every once in a while, something happens, you know, satellite once in a while. I do have DirecTV, so that could have been some of it, but it didn't seem like there was another thing recorded or anything to knock it off. It was very, very frustrating. Let's put it that way. CT, man, what's going on? How you doing, buddy?
Hello?
What's up, CT? How you doing, buddy?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Doing really good. What'd you think about Alvarado
coming off, like I mentioned earlier, coming off the knockout, then coming off those first two rounds where in the second round it wasn't looking good at all. For him to come out, stick to his game plan, but yet still entertain, it's not like he was just on the move one punch at a time. What did you think of Alvarado and you know, the fight itself? Great, great fight. And usually for a rematch, you just don't get these great of two-way fights for the rematch.
I thought it was good discipline on Alvarado's behalf because, like I was saying last week, I think that, you know, Brandon Rios always lowers his opponent in those type of fights. So I thought, you know, Alvarado was going to get lowered into that type of fight again, but, you know, he stuck to his game plan. I think, you know, he knows now that if he's able to make adjustments against Brandon Rios, Brandon Rios is the one that's going to have a lot of trouble. Because mainly, you know, Brandon Rios, he's a very good fighter, but him coming straight forward and, you know, he was just kind of just chasing Alvarado around the ring. He was trying to do, you know, trying to cut it off here and there, but for the most part, he was just chasing Alvarado around, and I think Alvarado fought very good. I think both fighters fought very good that night, but Alvarado definitely showed me something that I didn't think he had in him, you know, that boxing ability to move around and stay disciplined. He also showed that he can mix it up as well, so that's very dangerous for a guy to have a good foot movement like that and hard punching power, and Alvarado was fighting very good that night. If anything, it's Rios is going to be the one that has to make the adjustments in the next fight, and we'll see what he does if they do fight a third fight. I'll definitely be watching it. It definitely reminded me a lot of Gotti and Ward, the second fight, where Gotti had to make the adjustments, move around the ring, box a little bit. Definitely reminded me a little bit of that. It was a very good fight, back and forth flow. I'm looking forward to the third one if they fight again, but like I said, Rios is going to have an issue. You know, if he goes into that type of fight and Alvarado, you know, does the same thing in the third fight, Rios is going to have to cut off the ring a little bit more quicker, go to the body a little bit more, and just do what he does, but just a little bit more going to the body and cutting off the ring a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, I was very impressed with Alvarado. Very, very impressed. And I saw a couple people got dropped to impress who were on the line. Go ahead and press one again, and I'll definitely get to you here in just a moment. Switchboard has been giving me a little bit of issues, but I think it's okay. It looks like it's working fine now. It wasn't earlier, but it looks like it's all right. And I'll definitely come. Okay, now I see some work. Oh, I was in pressing one. 626, you're live on Rope-A-Dope Radio. What's going on?
Hello?
Hey, what's going on?
What are you guys talking about?
We're talking about what else, man? Alvarado and Rios. We had an interview earlier, Seth Mitchell, but Alvarado coming off that knockout loss previously, coming off the second round where he didn't look that good. He looked kind of buzzed in that round a couple different times. What'd you think of that Alvarado-Rios rematch? Usually the rematches don't live up to as much as excitement. I thought it lived up to the excitement, being that there was a lot of pressure for it to be an explosive fight. But Alvarado making those subtle changes, or at least just sticking to the game plan. What'd you think of that fight?
It was a great fight, but I saw the first fight just to see, like, what adjustments he made. And one adjustment that he made is he wasn't doing the fucking shoulder roll, dude. He was... it was like Andre Berto. It was just an epic fell for him, dude. And he started using his jab. Obviously, his footwork was way better. He wasn't standing and bang with them. He actually stayed low, and he tied up when he needed to. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
And when, you know,
body,
man, yeah, I thought both worked the body a lot better. And like you said, it was just subtle movements. I found that when he actually got on the move too much, he ended up backing himself up on the ropes and gotten a little issues, but it was the subtle movement, keeping that distance, pumping that jab in that, I mean, he was actually going, he was kind of switching southpaw orthodox as well, but, I mean, some of those counter right hands that he was landing, overhand right hands as well, I was very impressed. And another thing that you mentioned, 66, was the actual, the minor clinch on the inside is something that we definitely, you know, we definitely said that would be very, very, very important to get your shots off. And then if it gets on the inside too much, clinch just for a moment, kind of reset. And he did a great job. And also 66 with the footwork, definitely. I mean, he you're right about that shoulder roll. He was doing a resemblance of that shoulder roll, trying to use that counter right hand off it as well in the first fight. I just thought that Alvarado stuck to the game plan, still would brawl at times, but, you know, he didn't do as much of that. 626, what do you think? Do you think that, you know, Rios says, I want to be, you know, pushed right back into it. I want number three. But it sounds like now they're going to go to take some intern fights and maybe, you know, meet back at the end of the year or something like that. What do you think Rios and Alvarado should do? Do you think they should maybe fight other fighters and then come back? Or do you think, hey, let's get right to the third?
Well, something tells me that they're going to put Pacquiao in there with Rios just as a comeback opponent. That's what I've been hearing. And as far as Alvarado, I mean, I would love to see him fight either Rios, or, I mean, not Rios, Marquez or Tim Bradley. Personally, me. I would mind seeing the rematch, I mean, the third fight, but I think Alvarado would stop him late because Rios' whole game is to wear you down, and to me, at the end of the fight, it looked like Alvarado was the fresher fighter. He looked like he had more gas on the tank, and this, I think that would make Rios look or lose a lot of confidence, and as far as him getting hurt badly, too.
Yeah, I think they should just wait a little bit. I mean, the Rios Pacquiao, I do think you're exactly right as far as that had been talked about. I don't think, though, because I think Rios is still something that he can make some money off of, you know, on the networks. He's always going to be an exciting fighter. It's really only his first technical loss, you know, as far as the history, you know, it going down in history. Many people thought he lost against Abril, but it's interesting to see which, you know, which way they'll go. It does sound like now, you know, I even saw an interview where Garcia said we could take two fights and then go back to it, and Alvarado is going to try to maybe go back home to Denver and try to get some fights there as well and build their names and come back for a trilogy. I think the trilogy obviously has to happen, but Rios obviously is going to have an issue. You know, he didn't really, let's see, I mean, late in that fight, it was getting harder and harder to give Rios rounds, you know, late in that fight. I mean, from really the eighth round on, you know, it was tough. It was really tough. And I don't know, man, it's like, he is obviously, we know he's pretty one-dimensional. But he was having just issues of getting off. Obviously, Alvarado was bugging him a lot with his power enough to where he wasn't punching more than one punch at a time. And Garcia kept saying, you know, forget this one punch. You know, I think that maybe he got a little desperate and was trying to just land that big shot instead of just wearing people down, then landing the big shot. And like you said, 66, he looked the one, you know, he looked like he was the one wore down. Steven, man, what do you think? You think they should go right to it and just go for it? Why not? Or do you think they should maybe let these guys, I won't say rest, because both of them are going to be in other fights, and with Rios' style, he's going to get hit no matter, you know, who he fights, and Alvarado as well. I mean, he still took a lot of punishment in this fight, in the first half of it anyway, and, you know, his previous two big fights, Prescott and Herrera, he took plenty of punishment in those. What do you think? Do you think they should try to get back to it maybe by the end of the year and let these guys take a breather from each other? Or do you think, screw it, man, let's put him on a doubleheader and then fight again, or just fight right away? What are your thoughts on that, Steven?
My thoughts would be to, I mean, if I was a promoter, now this is a, I'm putting on my promoter hat, I think I'd give him a highlight fight. You know what I'm, and what I don't know if you know what I mean by that. Like, give him something, give him somebody that don't have to worry too much. You know, that isn't gonna, you know, pose too much of a challenge, but just enough to give him a good fight, mix it up real good, and basically end up with a nice highlight reel knockout, and build the third fight a little bit, and then go to it. You know, I don't know if you do something in, you know, midsummer, and then come back to the fight three around, you know, Christmas time, or, you know, how exactly they would do that. But that's what I would do. I would put one fight. I would go right to it. I would put something in between, especially if they're going to fight in Denver. You know, I've got a buddy who lives in Denver, and I've been out there several times, and you know, I don't know how the fight scene is out there. I've never really noticed anything that says it's much better than Cincinnati, really, and that's not saying much. Now, I know that the Hispanic community in and around Denver is growing quite a bit, and so, you know, fighting, you know, boxing, I'm sure, you know, the Hispanic community, I think, is really what's floating the sport anyway, by and large. But anyway, I think if bring Alvarado home, let him fight in Denver, let Rios fight, you know, in Texas or California, and then bring him back at the end of the year, and you know, in Denver or wherever they want to do it. But that's what I would do. I would give him somebody that they can, you know, somebody that's not going to knock him out, but that'll mix it up pretty good, and we'll go more than one or two rounds.
Right. What you're looking for is a showcase fight against a guy that people know, and maybe just an action fight, you know, just to get that entertainment back, that love for the brawl back for Rios, and maybe get their mind off, and let, you know, of course, him get his mind off that as well. You wonder if we're going to see, you know, Rios in the next couple of interviews and in the next fight in the camp and all that, talk about all the different things that he's working on, and I'm moving my head more, and, you know, all that type of thing. I did find it interesting, though, that he just could not get off enough shots. And once again, you know, Alvarado wasn't doing the most strategic thing. You know what I mean? It wasn't like he was one great, you know, clean jab or a great right counter, and then he just dip and be gone and land, you know, 18 punches out of 42. He wasn't outboxing him that way, you know. He was still falling in and getting, you know, and swinging and throwing plenty of punches, opening himself up as well. And not to say Rios didn't have success. I mean, like I said, those first two rounds, he had a ton of success. And I'll tell you what, another thing, and just kind of breaking this down into a little deeper, like I like to do here on Rope-A-Dope Radio, and we're live here on Rope-A-Dope Radio. I see some new numbers that I don't recognize. Go ahead and press 1 if you want to join the round table. Call 646-381-4990. Always welcome. You know, I may be the one-man show. A lot of people talk about, you know, give me props for holding down Rope-A-Dope Radio now with just one man, but it's not true. Sure, you know, we only have one official host, but, you know, Steven, CT, Carcino, I mean, all the people that call in, no matter if it's your first time calling in or whatever, those are really the co-hosts as well. So definitely press 1. I see some more numbers getting on there. And if you want to listen, too, nothing wrong with that. I always appreciate that. But if you look at it, Rios did come out, obviously, looking good. And what I wanted to say is Alvarado, his corner did a hell of a job with cuts and swelling. I mean, if you look, I mean, right after, there was a mark, a pretty bad red mark in bruising, even after the first round and the second round. And to me, you know, in that first round, you saw Alvarado moving sideways, but also backing himself up, you know. He had his guard high. He wasn't looking to counter. To me, he was pushing his punches early. To me, I don't know. Alvarado, if you go back and look at that first two rounds, I didn't like what I saw out of Alvarado, to be honest with you. I was like, wow, yeah, he's moving too much. He's moving backwards now. And at times, he was moving straight backwards, and we know that's an issue. And he had his high guard. That's great and all, but he wasn't punching back. He wasn't looking to counter. He was pushing his punches. He just didn't look that confident. And then, more. I mean, both fighters, like I did mention, though, used the body a lot more than in the first fight. Rios had the, head start on that. He got a great start to the body, but Alvarado came back with that. And but when he ducked down momentarily and staggered him, with that jab, the power jab, and then later with the right hand stood him up, they had some great exchanges, to finish that round. And you thought, okay, well, Rios looking like he hurt him. Alvarado did look like he was able to be okay by the end of the round. Now, midway and maybe 40 seconds left of the round, he didn't look so good. But for me, that third round, best round for Alvarado. He looked great. I mean, he stole the round. It was close still, but I saw a clinch for the very first time. And either firing, that right hand, overhand right away, or the counter. He was doing a great, great job. And he started stumbling Rios a little bit with his right hand. The fourth round, swing round, tight round. Could have went either way, in my opinion. Fifth round, Rios was worn, for some low blows. And there was a couple low blows, I thought, by both of them, but Rios did start to land a little bit more of those. But it really, like I said, the sixth round, laser lead right hands. Two-way round, but the counters or the lead right hand was just, like I said, laser-like. I mean, it was landing just perfectly. And especially for guys that are known to be brawlers, we knew that he was a little more accurate, and his punches just looked better. It's just accurate. It seems like he's got more hand speed than Rios. I think that's pretty evident. But I thought really the seventh round was the last best round for Rios. He was landing his right hands. He got back to his jab, the left hook. It just didn't seem like the left hook to the body, left hook to the head. That's a standby. That's a standby for Rios, and he just couldn't get it off. I had the fight 7-4-1. A lot of people balk at, tied rounds. I think there was two rounds that you could have said either way, in my opinion. So I had it 7-4-1. Once again, the corner did a great job with the swelling and the cuts. I mean, it was by the end of that fight, that left eye was just gaping. It had a gaping cut on it above Alvarado. But to me, overall, the subtle movement, the combo punches, he was trying to be first, or he'd counter well. He just could not get inside. And right about now, we're going to go ahead and bring in Carcino. Make sure you follow him on Twitter. Make sure you check him out on Carcino for Life on YouTube. Check out his website. Him and Sean do a great job, BoxingSocialist.com. Check them out, Boxing Socialist on YouTube, and Twitter and Facebook and all that good stuff. Carcino, man, rarely does a second fight live up to the first fight. And the way the first two rounds went, then the third and the fourth, the way it was just going back and forth, and both looked affected at times and buzzed and staggered at times. What a great fight. What a great fight for the second fight. And not just that, but for Alvarado to be coming off a knockout, like I mentioned earlier, and then to be coming off that second round where he didn't look good until the very end. He looked like he may have cleared his head a bit, but he didn't look good in that round, coming off that power jab and another overhand right that shook him. What a way for Alvarado to come back, though, in that hole, that little hole that he dug to come out. What did you think of Alvarado and Rios, the fight itself, and for Alvarado to come out and stick to his subtle game plan, a game plan that we talked about, subtly changing, doing some things different, not standing there and brawling, still through a lot of punches, though. What are your thoughts overall, Carcino?
Wow. What a night. It was amazing. I'm more than pleased, and I'm just impressed. And it's clear that Mike Alvarado definitely listens to Rope Adult Radio on Wednesday nights, because last week he followed my game plan to the letter. And that's not a bad thing. That is a compliment to him to go in there and do what he did, but he should have paid me instead of his trainer. I still had this fight either in Rio's favor or draw. And I think sometimes we get caught up in the emotion of the event that we just score the fight to the event. I went back and watched the fight again, and I gave 7 rounds to Rios. I could not give 7 rounds to Alvarado, even though some of the rounds were kind of close. It was like he flurried at the end to try to steal it. But a lot of those rounds, I think Rios won, and it got overshadowed by the event of how Alvarado came back. He had the crowd in his favor. He had the most energy going for him, and it worked. He listened exactly word for word to exactly what we talked about last week. And I think we all said the same thing, me, you, and Hollywood. And it was clear. He used movement, and when he got inside, he tied him up. And what went unnoticed was the body punches that he landed on Rios. It definitely had an effect, because Rios slowed down and wasn't cutting the ring off as much in the middle round. He kind of let Alvarado do what he wanted to do and set the pace. Once you let Alvarado roam around the ring with him in the beginning, he was able to cut him off and make Alvarado fight when he didn't want him to, when he didn't want to. But later on in the rounds, because of the body punches, he had to take his time with then cutting off the ring with Alvarado. And Rios makes mistakes. And that's what we talked about last week. Let Rios make the mistakes, and then you capitalize off of them. You know, do what you have to do. Move around as much as you can. Rios eventually will come to you and let him make the mistake. And he did. He eventually would come in with a lazy jab instead of in the beginning when he just worked off of the jab and came in with power shots. He got really comfortable with just coming in with full power on Alvarado. So he decided to come in with a lazy jab to try to, which he used as a range finder to just throw his right hand. He's not looking for a return shot, a short right hand from Alvarado, which he was timing Rios for every time. He was setting him up for that right hand every time he came in close with a short right, and that's how he ended up buckling him in the third round. He came in with a lazy left jab to try to shoot his short right hand, and so Rios never saw the right hand coming, and it's a consistent problem with him. He's so in tune with his power that he neglects what Robert Garcia is telling him for, like, don't get careless, because he gets careless in the ring. Because, he, you know, when a fighter with power, sometimes they just neglect certain defensive techniques that they've been taught already, because Robert Garcia was very upset with him about it. It's like, this is happening because you're not doing what you're supposed to do. You're getting reckless, and you need to just be wary of what's going on. And when he went back to boxing later on in the rounds, in the championship rounds, it was effective for him. Go back to the jab. He was able to hurt Alvarado again just off his jab, because he put so much weight, he shifts his weight on the jabs, and he's very impressive with it. But overall, the fans won. We all got a great fight, which could have went either way. It could have went either way. Some people scored it for Alvarado. I scored it a draw originally, then I went back and said, well, I would get 7 rounds to Rios, but I couldn't give 7 rounds to Alvarado. But it was, overall, it's a great night. Nobody was disappointed. So boxing won. With all the fans, we won that night.
There's no doubt about that. That's very well said. We definitely did. And you know, it'll be interesting to see. You know, we're probably going to hear all the things that we always hear from a guy that gets reckless. You know, I'm going to move my head more. I've been working on some things. I got a little too cocky. You know, this, that, and the other. we'll see. I mean, to me, I saw just the opposite. I watched it again, and I guess I've seen it, three times now. And, you know, it was tight. You know, not the tight to be like, oh, no, I there was one of my cards that I did 6-5-1, but overall it looked like 7-4-1 to me. And I thought that if you saw a draw in there, I wouldn't be shocked. You know what I mean? I definitely wouldn't, but I don't think I could give it 2 reels. If I had to, the scorecard is 115, 113, 115, 113, and then 114, 113. So at least the scorecards saw it was a tight fight. And I know what you mean. I do have to admit that seeing Alvarado hurt like that and then coming back in stunning reels and winning, you know, a lot of rounds all of a sudden, taking over the fight, people did get lost in that. And the crowd itself got lost in it. They were booing Alvarado and going for reels, and they switched. So I could see, how you had it a really tight fight. I didn't see it as a 9-3 fight. You know, some people thought it was just, 8-4, no ifs, ands, or buts, you know. Some people do, like I mentioned, freak out about, tied rounds. Go back, if you look at the history, tied rounds used to be a lot. They used to score them 2-3 in a fight. Of course, they had 15 rounds, so maybe that was the thing. But overall, I thought it was a great fight. And, Carcino, one more thing on this topic. What do you think they should do? Do you think they should both take intern fights and then come back in the fall and winter and get it on again? Do you think they should maybe go right for it? What are your thoughts? Because it does sound like they're going to at least take, both of them, each other, some time off probably, but then also, get right into some other fight and then get back. What are your thoughts? I mean, obviously, it's going to be a fun fight to watch, but would you prefer it as a fan to watch it maybe later this year or early next year? Or are you one of those people that say, hey, let's get it on, man? I mean, these guys can't make a bad fight.
Yeah, I'm one of the guys who thought that this fight shouldn't have happened right away. I thought that with that kind of a grueling fight, that this damages a fighter. You know, you could damage both guys like this. We saw this happen with Israel Vasquez and Rafael Marquez, Those guys gave so much. They did 4 fights. The 4th fight was just like a whitewash because they had nothing else left to give. Vasquez just had to retire. It was just, there's none more he could give. And in a fight like this, these guys are young. You don't want to see them destroy their careers battling each other, because you see, every time you put them in a ring, you're going to get this kind of result. You can see this fight's going to go on forever and ever, but these are grueling fights. You know, neither guy could come out for the press conference, the post fight. They both were in the hospital, So, yeah, they do need other fights. There's other fights out there, and then they can do it later down the road. There's no need to have these guys keep killing themselves, fighting each other, when there's other fights out there for them to fight. But, like, right now, like, Aram's in it's a big mess going on. Like, he was trying to, he offered Rios to Pacquiao. Pacquiao doesn't want Rios. Rios don't care who he fights. Pacquiao don't want him. He wants either Bradley or Marquez. Marquez doesn't want Pacquiao. He wants Bradley. Bradley wants Pacquiao, but if he can't get that, he'll take Marquez. And now it's just a big mess where everybody wants to fight somebody else. Pacquiao don't want anything. He wants Marquez or Bradley, nothing to do with Rios. It's just a big circus of Can Bob straighten it all out? Well, let's see what happens down the road.
Yeah, that's well said, no doubt about it. And speaking of that fight and that card, it drew about 5,400, I believe, which is pretty solid, obviously, on Easter as well, with some big fights coming up in Vegas and big fights coming up in general. So solid, very solid. That undercard, though. Late replacement. Usually the late replacement would be a guy fighting the young, unbeaten guy. But Bredis Prescott, 26-4, 20 KOs. Won against Terrence Crawford, 19-0, 15 KOs, now 20-0.
coming into it. He was 19, I should say. But this fight, you know, Terrence looked good. You know, he came up there. Not a whole lot happened in that first round. He's just kind of a stick and move, fill it out type. You know, first two rounds, really not a whole lot going on. Had the jab, looked to be a little busier. He did switch to southpaw, started getting that straight left hand. He found a home with that left hand, you know, from that southpaw once he switched. He really did. To me, the first four rounds, it just felt like Prescott needed to throw a punch, you know, or more punches, I should say. It was like, wow, man. I mean, he's not throwing, you know. So it was kind of weird. Now in the fifth round, I felt like Prescott finally was landing something, but not nearly enough. There was an accidental head clash in that fifth round. To me, it was just Crawford first. You know, he was throwing first. He was countering well. He was using hooks very well, throwing. You know, both of them actually threw some nice hooks in the fight, but you know, Crawford landed the better punches. You know, I think he was pretty much dominant. The seventh round did, I believe, produce the best two-way action. The last 2 minutes, they definitely gotten some good exchanges. But Crawford, you know, mid and late in that fight, would use 3-4 jabs. You know, he was pumping that jab, then all of a sudden straight left or right hook. Jab, right hook was big. And he actually would turn his right jab into a hook at the last second. I saw him doing that several times, especially later in that fight. I was very impressed with that. Started going to the body as well. He was picking up the pace. Another thing I liked about him, he had this, you know, he had the fight won. He had it won. And a young fighter either goes head hunting, which I don't think he head hunted. I thought he was still patient and was breaking down the body and setting up his punches and being smart at the same time. But I liked how he, at least to me, he looked like he was, once he had Prescott in a little bit of trouble near the end, you know, in those last couple rounds, especially the last round, he really started letting his hands go. I thought it was a great overall performance. I also thought it was funny how they already said that nobody could handle him at 135. He had gone up to 140. You know, HBO was talking like this guy might be able to fight Broner and beat Broner. Of course, Broner, you know, 147 now, so obviously 135, it doesn't seem like he's going to go back to 135 anytime soon. If anything, it'd be 140 more than likely. You never know, though. But, Carcino, what'd you think? And I'm going to go down the line to the callers. Go ahead and press 1. I see some more callers on, or call 646-381-4990. What'd you think of Terrence Crawford's performance moving on to 20-0? He looked pretty sharp. Being that it was a late notice style difference in a shot in HBO, I thought he looked pretty good.
I thought he was amazing. I mean, I knew this was going to happen. Once they made the arrangement in the fight, I said, oh, yeah, it's a showcase fight for Crawford. So people get to see Terrence Crawford in a fight that will showcase his skill. Regis Prescott can only fight one way. He's a guy that's got to land a big right hand. He's kind of flat-footed. If you come in a straight line, he can land a big right hand and change a fight, but that's if you stay in a straight line. He can't cut off the ring. Terrence Crawford could do whatever he wanted to do to him in the fight and frustrate him. He took away his right hand, and when he did that, he got hit with maybe a couple, but he basically took it away from him, and he didn't have a plan B. He was frustrated. He couldn't get off. And when he thought about getting off, Crawford was already hitting him and then moving and turning him. And then he was paying him in the body. He was just showing people how to box. You know, we haven't been seeing too much boxing lately to where someone really goes out and actually orchestrate a boxing fight. And it probably was unusual to people, but they've been normally seeing people just brawl and go ahead and toe-to-toe and worn it out on HBO for the past couple of weeks. We kind of like forgot what boxing was supposed to be. Hit and not get hit. And that's what it was. It was boxing 101. I loved it because I haven't seen it in so long. And then he did kind of remind me of Pernell Whitaker a little bit. He did a lot of things Pernell would do. But he was really just a breath of fresh air. I was like, wow, this is a breath of fresh air for me. I was like, I like to see a boxing lesson go down with a guy who's not going to lose the fight. I was like, there's no way he can lose this fight because he's in total control of it. And he almost, I thought he could have stopped Prescott down the line because he was so frustrated, he became so open. You know, he couldn't shift his weight on any of his punches because the target wasn't there. Prescott was up, and Crawford was moving, and Prescott couldn't find him. It was just unbelievable how he could not cut off the ring. He kept circling right. He couldn't get away from the right hand, and he just was frustrated. It was just showing, too. You know, Regis Prescott has a lot of power, but he's basically one-dimensional. So that's how it went for the whole rest of the night. It was just Crawford's night, and I don't know who he's going to fight next, but I'm very interested. You know, Cameron Duncan told me about him. He's like, yeah, I got this kid. You know, this guy can box anybody's socks off. Anybody. I was like, wow. And now I finally got to see what he really looked like on the big stage on HBO, and everybody else get to see him, and we'll see what happens next, you know.
Yeah, we will see. Obviously, you know, he definitely made a good representation of himself on HBO to do it. Late notice, like I said, usually be the opposite. You know, I mean, obviously, the late notice was a big deal only because it was going to be a different fighter, not just, it's not like he got thrown in, you know, late and wasn't ready. He had a fight coming up. He was fighting on the undercard, so that helped him. But still, a lot of times it's the up-and-comer or the bigger name, obviously, the unbeaten prospect that gets that type of advantage. And that wasn't the case. Steven, man, what do you think? You know, we talked about how, you know, I think Carcino said it perfectly, that we've been seeing a lot of brawls lately, especially on HBO, and we love them. Yeah, I love every type of fighter, personally. But the way the skill was coming together, we've seen Prescott bother some other guys. I mean, speaking of one, Alvarado, he had Alvarado hurt bad in that fight, bleeding, you know, from a lot of areas, from his face, basically, from his nose and his face. It was bad for him. He did, to Alvarado's credit, show heart, comeback, get, you know, the win, the big, big win that obviously catapulted him, you know, higher up there. But Crawford, man, what did you think of Terrence Crawford, a guy that hasn't, you know, been talked about a lot? He got a nice, you know, step-up fight, and he did his work. What did you think of him? I thought it was overall a great performance. What did you think of the young Crawford on HBO?
Well, I pretty much agree. I it's one of those things where I never really heard of the guy that much, and you know, I'm a little skeptical. Like they were saying, you know, repeatedly saying that, you know, it's easy to build a record and, you know, and not play in the middle of the country like that. And so I was a little skeptical, and I'm thinking, you know, I've seen Prescott and what he can do. And so I thought, you know, I wasn't sure if this was set up for Prescott to you know, get a nice win over an undefeated prospect, or if it was set up for the prospect to get a nice win over a guy we've heard of. And I don't know how it was meant to be, but we saw how it ended up, and the guy boxed him, and I kind of agree with Carcino. I think if he would have stepped it up just a touch, he may have been able to get Prescott out of there. I don't know. But I was pretty impressed. I'd like to see the guy again. I saw some tweets about, you know, now, you know, this guy's kind of the class of the division. I don't know that I would go that far, you know, off of that. But still, I would like to see him again. And then I just had, Chris, if you don't care, I had a couple more points I wanted to talk about that Rios Alvarado fight.
All right. Please do. Get it out.
The first one would be that, you know, Carcino touched on this too, that there was some decent body work going on. But I would have liked to have seen Alvarado commit to it a little more. And the reason I say that, and I know that Rios and Antonio Margarito are two different fighters, but in a way they're not. And I just keep remembering the Mosley-Margarito fight, where Lampley said, you know, Mosley committed to the body. fairly early. And I remember Jim Lampley making the comment, you know, should you try to hit a freight train in the body, you know? And at the end of the night, we saw how that worked out for Mosley. And I think that if somebody's going to stop Rios and actually stop him, that's what it's going to take. It's going to take a very, very committed body attack. But I think it can be done. I know you open yourself up, and so a guy's going to have some whiskers. But I think that's how you're going to have to stop. If you want to stop him, that's how you're going to have to stop Rios. It's going to have to be that body work. Just like Carcino said, it slowed him down. What he did do slowed him down. And had he committed to it a little bit more, you know, all of a sudden you're talking about a guy that, you know, you might be teeing off of come around 10 or 11, and you might, you know, be teeing off on the guy and could possibly stop him. The other point is more of a question for you or anybody else. I had a little bit of a red flag in that fight when pretty much every time they showed the corner, his cut man is doing the talking and the coaching in Alvarado's corner. To me, that sends up red flags. You know, maybe some guys may be able to let that go, but you know, in boxing, there's so much ego and machismo involved. You know, how long is a trainer going to allow something like that to happen when you know you've got your cut man basically coaching him? I mean, you know, you saw it. I mean, he was the one talking. He was the one telling him do this. And his trainer basically just kind of stayed over to the side. And, you know, I wonder if that doesn't cause some issues, you know, here, you know, coming up soon or when they get back into training camp again, you know, is everybody going to, you know, remember their positions or is this going to be a situation where, you know, the cut man is almost usurping the trainer? And I just wonder if anybody else noticed that, if that was a concern for anybody.
Yeah, I definitely had a little concern about it. Didn't hear a lot about after that talked about it. I mean, I heard a lot about it negative-wise, but I also heard read a little piece of maybe it's an interview after or something, but that is something that they're somewhat comfortable with, and also that, you know, the trainer was saying that, you know, or the cut man trainer, whatever, he learned that, you know, he started seeing people that to do both, you know, and that's something that's not way out of the realm as far as the way he was explaining it. But I know what you're saying. There could be something to that. No matter what, maybe somebody else wants to, you know, talk about that as well. Obviously, there's still a fair amount of news to cover. I'm definitely going to recap quickly anyway the Monte Carlo Super 4 tournament. I'll talk about that a little bit. Golovkin, not much to talk about with this fight, but lots to talk about at the end, that's for sure. The fight didn't last that long. I thought it would last a little longer, but, you know, Ishida has shown a pretty good chin. So, obviously, we're going to talk about that just a little bit. And I'll jump right into that. The Golovkin fight was on the, the main event of the whole pay-per-view card. And if you look at the card itself, you know, integrated sports pay-per-view can turn out a pretty decent product. If you look at probably the last 3 or 4 years, some of the fights in Puerto Rico that they've put on, some of those cards, some of the quality of the cameras in the past have been lackluster, to say the least. A lot of times it looks like you're watching a fight from the 80s and the 70s. But, you know, you have some old school guys broadcasting. It's still a good fight. Who cares if it's an HD or not? It's still a good fight. I mean, it doesn't stop me from watching a classic back in the day and thinking of it just like a fight I'm watching, you know, live today. So, but I will say this time on this broadcast, the camera was a lot better. So they gave you 5 fights for $25. And that's another thing I like about it. There was some undercard fights. I'll just you know, cover fairly quickly. You know, not a ton to talk about, more like kind of what we mentioned, showcase fights. A guy that's 12-1 with 12 KOs, Makabu. I think Makabu is his name. It was three rounds, not a whole lot. He fought this dude named Tomos Lodi. He was 9-0 going into that fight. He had a draw. It was just supposed to be a showcase-type fight. Makabu came out and had a nice jab, had a high guard, started going for the body, landed several left uppercuts, wearing them down already in the second round, going to the body with both hands, by the way. A right hook, then a left hook, dropped them for a knockout. And after some more punching, just clean punches, they stopped the fight. So the first fight, not a lot to talk about, but Makabu, to me, looked like he was pretty dominant there. Then also we had a guy that's another prospect. This was a swing, or not the swing fight. I thought it was a swing fight, but I thought we were going to get one more, but it turns out we couldn't. But this dude, his last name is, I believe, Lika. Lika, he's 12-0. It's Kirill Lika. It's K-I-R-I-L-L. He was 12-0, 10 KOs. Came out early with some nice left hooks. Brought the counter right hand out as well. The counter overhand right several times early in that fight. Just sharp, accurate punching, man. And the one that knocked him out, it was a left hook, then an overhand right that landed right on the temple. Twisted his neck a little bit, dropped him. It just kind of stuck him into the mat. It was kind of like he was just in the canvas, kind of like in mud trying to get up. He was frozen, let's put it that way. Then you start to get into more mainstream fights that people kind of know what's going on. We've seen Denis Grachev. He's 12-1-1 now, 13-1-1. They call him Drago's son, and when you look at him, you know why. The announcer, though, and this is kind of a side, you know, story. Maybe you streamed it. Maybe you got the pay-per-view. Sorry, you saw it. If you saw the live guys that were doing the broadcast, one of the guys was just funny. His voice was funny. He was just a funny guy. But it was kind of irritating at times. But if anyone, and this may throw people off if you haven't seen this movie, but if you've ever seen Clockwork Orange, okay, I'll just cover this really quick. If you've seen Clockwork Orange, then you're with me. Okay, the guy that was announcing the fight sounded just like the lead character, Alex, in Clockwork Orange, his PO, the guy that kept the parole officer, that kept coming back and warning Alex that he's going to get in trouble. And the way he delivered his lines, not spot on, but pretty damn close. It was pretty funny. But either way, kind of side note there, but Zolt Irdai, I think that's how you say his name. Zolt Irdai was 33-0. He has 18 KOs, a guy that we've heard a lot about. He's been put in there fairly soft to get to 33-0. Denis Grachev, like I said, we've seen him. I believe we've seen him on ESPN and Showtime. That fight was pretty good. The other fight, so that was the light heavyweight fight, okay? And it's interesting because that's a light heavyweight fight, but then the Edwin Rodriguez fight going against Moderna, who's an unbeaten guy from Argentina, 19-0, 13 KOs. They're at the super middleweight, but the four-man tournament, is going to be a catchweight. So it's kind of interesting. It'll be back, I believe, in July. They'll be back. I think it was July 13th, something like that. But anyway, Zolt, you know, Irdai is a guy that a lot of people have been trying to see what he's all about and see what's going on with him and see if he's just not this guy that's kind of been softly brought along, you know. He's got a good jab, and that's what he was doing the first 3 to 4 rounds. You know, I thought that the second round, Grachev was more active. But Grachev was missing his shots early. It took him a while. He was having problems adjusting to the Irdai jab. That was good in the movement. His upper body movement, I thought, is in his jab is probably his best attributes. He countered quick with his right hand, couple uppercuts late in the fourth round. Good ending to that fourth round. And maybe that fourth and fifth round, you could start to see Grachev look more like the second round. And in that sixth round, I thought he won it, and he came out and he really started letting his punches go and landing them. You know, a lot of times he was punching the whole fight. He's just so stiff, and he's kind of got that straight-up style. He comes forward, but he's kind of stiff, you know what I mean? He's not a bad puncher, but he can be a little, you know, a little wide and stiff. But to me, that's after the sixth round, he really started letting his hands go. He was busier, left and right hands with the hooks. And to me, he was just effective. He was throwing effective punches. You know, he was landing his jab. He was slipping in his jab in there with the overhand right in the left hooks. The last round, they really slugged it out. Tight round, really. 5-5, it could have been that type of fight. The judges had it 96-94 for Grachev, and they did it at 96-94 for Irdai. Irdai actually gave his gloves to, like, a prince in the crowd. You know, the setup was really weird. It was in the casino, and it's from Monte Carlo there. And like I said, it's called the $1 million, what do they call it? The $1 million Super Four, Monte Carlo. And I don't know, it was just kind of weird because they were in front of, like, I guess our Congress, you know, that type of thing. It was like Parliament or whatever they have there. Was kind of, they were talking about princes and royalty and all this stuff in the crowd. It was just a weird setup. It wasn't a big crowd. But it was at a big casino. So maybe that's the big crowd for there. I don't really know. The setup was kind of weird, but hey, you know, it's boxing. It's good money, and it's given, you know, guys an opportunity. It gave Grachev a great opportunity, and look what he did with it. Edwin Rodriguez as well, coming in 22-0, 15 KOs. He was taking on Matt Zanera, a guy that 19-0, like I mentioned, coming into it, 13 KOs. He's from Argentina. He looked good. I thought he actually looked pretty good in the fight, but Rodriguez pretty much dominated the fight. You know what I mean? He did, land a really a powerful uppercut that was probably, well, it was not probably, it was a revenge, he said, because he had been hit a couple times late and low, and he even admitted that, you know, it was, you know, I got low blowed, so I returned the favor. And that type of thing. But overall, there was a point deducted by both, I think, in the fight. If I'm correct there, Radek punches and low blows were a lot of warning, though. But I thought Rodriguez, you know, he had that jab going. That was the difference in those early rounds, to be honest with you. But the overhand right that we know Edwin likes to land, he was landing that. I thought Matt Anera had his moments in the first maybe 6-7 rounds. He had moments. It just, he would respond when he get hit, but he didn't have enough moments. I think that was the key. And there was a knockdown. It was more of a right hand kind of in the back of his head. Another thing, you know, that they were talking about, kind of closer to the ear. I believe that was in, I'll say the ninth round. The cards were 96-92. Two different cards in the 95-92. Really just so that right hand, he started mixing in the uppercuts later in the fight a little bit. But, you know, another thing with that knockdown back of the head and all those points, it's one of those things where Matt Venera was ducking down real low. So there was really no other place to land his punches, you know what I mean? But either way, good, you know, fight. For Edwin Rodriguez, now he's going to meet Dennis Grachev, and he's Drago's son. That's his nickname. He had it right on his white trunks. It was kind of funny. He does look like him, though. As far as Gennady Golovkin, I mean, he took out Ishida pretty quick. He came out, jab was pumping. He landed some good early left hooks. Ishida was holding his own in that first round, I thought. But he just started landing some stiff punches, right hands, few uppercuts mixing in. Then the overhand right hook just sent him. That was in the third round. Sent him through the ropes, onto the table. I mean, it was rough. He was out. Ishida was pretty much out and just kind of stuck there.
Luckily, he got knocked out right by the doctor, so he could stop it right there. Stay busy fight that Golovkin performed very well in. I'll say that. Overall, good card. I mean, the first three fights were knockouts, and vicious knockouts at that. So, entertaining card, I thought. Another thing is they had, Hagler lives in Italy for most of the year with his wife. He married an Italian wife, and they had him on for an interview, and they kept showing him. And it was kind of like their celebrity that they brought there that we'd know. They had other celebrities and, like I said, princes and all this stuff. It was, like I said, considering the money that these fighters are getting and the opportunity and the fact that it was, you know, it was on pay-per-view and it was a decent card, you know, the casino, I don't know, like the whole setup was kind of strange, but hey, they're going back in July, so to me, I thought it was a pretty good card. I got to say, I thought it was a pretty good card. Also, one more fight, just to clear that up, his name is, it's actually a Ricky Hatton fighter. He trains and promotes him. Sergey, Rabachak, I think. Rabachenko, my fault. Yeah, Rabachenko. I'm looking at my notes here. 23-0 now with 17 KOs, and didn't take him long to beat his Italian fighter that he was going against. I've never really seen this Adriano fighter who he beat. He was 20-3 coming in. You know, from the start, Rabachenko just dictated the round, dictated the fight. He mixed up his punches well. You know, Adriano, he landed some nice punches back in the second round, I think, like at the minute mark. But he got caught on the ropes after that and started getting some telling shots landed on him, especially the uppercut. Couple hooks to the body and head as well, and then there was a nice left hook, overhand left hand, I should say, not a left hook, now that I'm checking my notes, over a jab, landed the left hand, and basically his legs just fell out from underneath him. I mean, it just, he was done. So, fun, entertaining fight, fight card, I should say, overall. So, yeah, it was pretty fun, and you know, I'm looking forward to see, you know, what else to add to that card. Another thing is I believe, you know, and who knows? I mean, sometimes these things don't happen, but that Matt De Niro is supposed to fight Zolt Erdai, because they're supposed to, the losers are supposed to fight each other, and that makes the kind of a round robin almost. So, not really a round robin, though, I think about it fully, but speaking of Golovkin, though, like I said, he made quick work of it. Triple G stayed busy, knocked him out. Great knockout again. But now, and I'm going to go to Carcino and then 626 and a couple other people that I want to hear their take on this. It sounds like HBO's got a triple header planned, or at least in the works, for June 29th on the East Coast. Golovkin versus Matthew Maclin. I think it's a very solid fight. Proska was a top 10 guy, a guy that at least shown some promise with a knockout from a sturdy vet, I guess you could call him, but not necessarily at that top 5 level, you know what I mean? Whereas, you know, win, lose, or draw, Macklin's been in there with some solid guys at middleweight. I don't know. He gave Martinez plenty of issues until Martinez turned it on. Carcino, man, what do you think about this fight? Golovkin and Matthew Maclin, more of a name that we can know of in recent times. He's fought pretty well. What do you think of that fight? Because it sounds like it's getting close to a done deal. I like that fight for Golovkin, man.
Hello?
Yeah, well, yeah, I can hear you. What do you think of that Golovkin possible fight, I should mention, on HBO, Matthew Maclin with Golovkin?
Oh, I would love that. That's one of the fights I was just talking about. It's time for him to step up. I mean, I'm impressed with him, but I would love to see him fight guys like, because I was hearing all these other names that possibility, but Maclin is a great fighter, or Peter Quillen, or someone that's in that category of a natural middleweight. You know, Gabriel Rosado is not a natural middleweight. and Proska is way too small, and Yoshida was a small middleweight, you know, and this guy is so powerful, you know, he really should be at 168, but he's at middleweight, and I feel like, okay, let's see what, you know, everyone said everybody's afraid of this guy, but, you know, make them, you know, become their mandatory, you know, so give them, kick down some doors, so they got to make these fights. You know, I think Macklin is a great shot, you know, if you want to try to get up to a Martinez and get that type of fight. These are the type of fights you got to fight. You got to beat the Macklins. You got to beat the Darren Barkers. You need to fight the Peter Quillins, you know. Make Peter Quillin get in the ring. I mean, become his mandatory. But if you don't want to fight, give up the belt. You know, you got to go. Or Daniel Gill. You know, these are the type of fighters, you know, that you got to fight. The upper echelon at 160 to, you know, before you call out Martinez. Because Martinez fought mostly all those guys, you know. He earned his way to the middleweight title and got to the position where he is. And I think Golovkin is on the road there, and he's got impressive knockout streaks, but Martinez got more knockouts than the guy got fights. So, you know, it's just time. I love to fight with Macklin. I mean, Macklin's going to give him some angles. He might run out of gas. That's always been his problem with stamina. I don't know how long he'll be able to take the pressure of Golovkin, but he definitely will give him some boxing lessons. Because Macklin does know how to move.
Yeah, and I mean, for quite a while, I mean, it kind of surprised me how Macklin fought, style-wise anyway, not that he didn't make a good representative. I figured he would represent himself just fine, but I he was more patient. And until he started actually, you know, opening up, he actually was, that's when he started getting really, you know, taken to the woodshed, I guess you could say. So I'm pumped for the fight for all the things you just said, Garcino. I think that it's time to step up. It's not his fault that it hasn't stepped up all the way, though. He has tried. Yoshida, you know, in his last opponent, Rosada, both 154-pounders. So, yeah, it's time. It's time, and I think that this is a great fight for him. It'll be interesting to see how Macklin fights against him. And also Golovkin, I mean, he's going to be in there with a bit of a bigger guy now, too, than what he's been fighting. So I like it. I think it definitely needs to happen. And there's a lot of fights here, doubleheaders or tripleheaders, that are coming up on both HBO and Showtime that have been talked about in the last couple of days, and we'll go over that, no doubt about it. Speaking of Sergio Martinez in his fight with Macklin, if he gets by Murray, this team is talking about Golovkin down the line and talking about Daniel Gill. And at the same time, though, Andre Ward's been talking about Chavez Jr. lately. It sounds like he wants that money fight. ESPN Deportes is actually reporting that, JCC Jr., Chavez Jr. wants to fight Golovkin or Ward, and right now doesn't have the interest in Martinez. So that'll be interesting as well to see. Obviously, you know, if you're on Twitter right now, you're hearing a lot of about Mayweather right now. They're having, 30 Days in May, I think, is the documentary. It's an hour documentary on Showtime. Definitely check it out. I guess, you know, it's getting a lot of pretty good reviews. It's kind of crazy, though. Like, this whole situation is actually kind of crazy because just the clips that I saw, when they were, showing and advertising, I should say. Couldn't find a word there. to me, it was kind of interesting because it was an HBO event, but yet they had him. You know, they obviously, Showtime obviously can probably be around there, but they had a camera on him after the Cotto fight, when he's leaving the Cotto press conference and all that. So I guess it's just May what he did before his stint, you know, which, and I guess they're showing a little bit more human side and not just the I'll throw money at the camera and talk about, you know, my walls and my bathroom and you know, what's on them
in the Big Boy Mansion and all that. You know, they're actually showing a little different view, and I think that is actually, as far as the broadcasting team in All Access, I think that they're actually going to show a little bit more wide variety out of Floyd, but still touch upon the keys there with Floyd. But it sounds like it's going really good from Twitter. A lot of people are happy about it. Something to check out if you're a boxing fan. That's 30 days in May on Showtime. Got some fights coming up this weekend. Obviously, the pro debut of Zhou Shiming, I think it is, Shiming. HBO2's got an afternoon show. I think the best fight on there, you know, Gloria is coming back with he's got the WBA and WBO flyweight. He's going against Juan Francisco Estrada. That'll be a good fight, I think. But I'm looking forward to that Diego Magdaleno, and Rocky Martinez for Martinez's 130 belt, junior lightweight belt, WBO. I like that fight a lot. I think it'll be interesting, and I'm looking forward to it because you got yourself a vet that likes to come forward, has been in there with some solid guys, doesn't have the most, has a good resume as far as fighting guys, but, you know, when push comes to shove, he can be outboxed. He gets hit a lot. He's very one-dimensional, and he can get outboxed, but if you want to stand there and bang with him, you know, he'll do that with you as well. He likes to go to the body, but it does seem like Rocky Martinez, you know, coming off his last fight, a lot of people thought he lost that against Burgos. I was one of them. Diego Magdaleno, what's he going to do? This is his first big fight, HBO, on HBO2, I should say, technically, but whatever. Big fight for him. Will he, will he just go for it? You know, will he really go for it? And stand there, bang, and fight the Martinez fight and take that risk? Or will he show some of the skill that he's shown? He's an actor puncher. He has some skills. He seems like his hand speed's nice. It seems like he's got good pop. His knockout, you know, record is not good by any stretch. But if you watch him fight, it does seem like he has some skill. Now, will he... You know, I have seen him against a lesser opponent kind of, you know, admire his shots, like they say, you know, kind of fall in and really try to deliver a clean-looking shot against a guy that he should be beating. And it has looked pretty good on the way up. Other times looked just okay. It's a big fight for him. So I think that Diego has what it takes to outbox Rocky Martinez, but it'll be interesting to see, because he's never been at this type of level, if he doesn't sit there and try to bang it out. Maybe he will bang it out at moments, which I think he could get into some exchanges, of course. I mean, Martinez is head first coming for you. But to me, of course, he's one-dimensional. He's already shown that he could be outboxed, but it almost seems like he's not an old guy, but it just seems like he's just not the same fighter. And he's been in a lot of wars, even on his way up, before, you know, he fought Ricky Burns in some of those big fights in England. Cook, you know, was another one that he kind of came on the scene over there and made a big impact. We'll see. To me, Martinez just doesn't look like what a lot of people thought he would be like. I thought he lost to Burgos. You know, I thought Juan Burgos beat him. But good fight. I like the fight. I think it'll be interesting. I like to see a young fighter like that and see what he's going to do. You know, with that, because there is a lot of pressure, man. You want to look good. You know, you want to look great, obviously. You definitely want to look great. But, you know, can you get a little too out of hand? Will you be trying to look too good and end up, you know, making the mistake? We see it all the time. We just talked to a fighter earlier, Seth Mitchell, who looked very good in the fight, ended up getting knocked out. So, to me, I think that'll be a great fight. The other fight as well, I think, is going to be nice between Estrada and Valerio. I really think so. You know, I mean, Valerio had a great, great last year. Could have been one of the fighters of the, you know, he was definitely a finalist for the fighter of the year.
you know, the unification at the flyweight. So that should be fun. That should be a lot of fun. And Carcino, man, what do you think about that fight between Martinez and Magdaleno? You know, his brother looks pretty damn good too as well. Sometimes he looks a little better on the way up than Diego did. What are your thoughts on this fight? Do you think that this might be too, you know, high of a step, considering Diego really hasn't been in there with that much competition on his way up? Or do you think Rocky Martinez is just squares up too much, comes forward, and just wants to bang? Do you think Diego will just outbox him? What are your thoughts on how this is going to go, man? Because I think Diego's going to do it, but there are some things that I wonder about him and wonder if he'll stick to that game plan of just using his skill.
Well, I think that this fight's going to come down to the ninth round. When it gets to round nine, it's going to tell the whole story, because the Martinez is going to probably fatigue a little bit once it gets down to those championship rounds. And that's the area he got to step up in. And he's got to show that this is where I got to take the fight over it. And it's hard. It's hard for a fighter like that to make that kind of adjustment. But when you're at that next level and you want to get to the next level, those are the type of things you have to train for. You got to train for 12 rounds. You got to train to be able to condition yourself, to pace yourself, to be able to win championship rounds and go the distance. But I think Diego is more, I think, sound technically, and I think that's why I'm going to go with him. Even though I see flaws in him also, I just think that he'll get the job done, I think, more effectively. I think he should come out victorious. But it is a close fight. It is hard to say which guy style is going to dictate the fight. It's really hard.
Yeah, it is. And it's definitely, either way, we're going to get a step-up fight. And I love step-up fights, man. I think it's, that another step-up fight that has been made recently, Jay Leon Love against Rosado. I think that's a great step-up fight. I think that it'll be interesting to see Rosado back at 154 after the punishment that he took, although didn't go down a bunch. Still took a lot of punishment and obviously cuts. But then again, Jay Leon Love just got in a rough and tumble fight with Finley, and at times didn't look great when a guy was being that aggressive and on the inside and kind of rough and dirty at times too. So I saw some promise out of Jay Leon Love, but I saw some weakness, something he's going to have to work on, and I think that's what that fight was for. But then to go right back in to another fight like that, it'll be interesting, man. 6-2-6. Of course, you're live on Rope and Dope Radio, man. We've covered a lot of things since the last time, you talked here. What do you think of Golovkin as a fighter overall? And not just that, but would you like to see Golovkin step all the way up and go against a Matthew Macklin, who's a top five guy? What are your thoughts on some of the stuff we've been talking about? Maybe you want to talk about Martinez Magdaleno. But what are your thoughts in general against Golovkin? Because right now, JCC Jr. is talking about Golovkin as well for a possible future opponent.
I think he's a pretty good fighter. I think Macklin is a good step up. I think Macklin has improved a lot under Buddy McGirt. He used to be more of just a brawler, but he added some boxing skills to him. So, but I don't really think he has the power to keep Golovkin off of him, personally. And, yeah, I think that's a good step up, though.
Yeah, that's well said. That is really well said, because that might be it. You know, I think you're right, though. He definitely has improved. And he really, I'm not going to say shocked, but I wasn't expecting him to fight the way he fought those first handful of rounds. I really didn't. I didn't expect him to just slow down like that. You know, his style was, I'm coming, you know. But he knew that I'm coming doesn't always work against a counterpuncher. But once he opened up, then all of a sudden he was getting countered. So, yeah, I'm interested to see, because if he stays behind that guard and stays behind that jab, you know, let's see Golovkin, you know, moving his head on that. He's shown that he can move his head. He's shown that he cares something about defense. I like what I see out of Golovkin. How couldn't you, right? But I want to see him step up. So I think it's a hell of a step-up fight for him. I think it's very, very solid. But I do think he wins the fight. I do think he does win the fight, but I like the step up. I think it's needed, and the time is now. Time is now, and if you keep going, I mean, I really don't think they put him in with Chavez Jr. I really don't, personally. I just don't see it. Of course, if he looks, you know, so-so against Macklin, then, you know, who knows? I mean, Macklin was a rumored opponent for Chavez Jr. here in June, so, you know, we'll see. Just talking a couple more things. We got 10 minutes left of the live feed here, the live stream, I should say. Then we go into archive moments here. It should be about 10 minutes. Go ahead and call 646-381-4990 if you want to add your 2 cents on whatever. The interview earlier, if you missed it, a couple minutes into the show, make sure you check it out. Seth Mayhem Mitchell, you can follow him at SethMayhem48 on Twitter. He's got a big fight coming up on Showtime, the rematch with Jonathan Banks. Jonathan Banks, a guy who shook up Mitchell the first time, got the knockout in the second round. It's a rematch he doesn't have to go right back to, but he is. June 22nd, Brooklyn Barclays Center on Showtime. Great, probably about 15, 20-minute interview. We dug into it, man. We dug into his inner circle. We dug into some of the mistakes he made. We talked about the press clippings. We talked about what he could do different and just a variety of stuff. I also talked about how he's going to have to play like lead security in that Malignaggi and Broner pressers and all that. You know, the presser, the weigh-in, he's going to have to be all around that because it's going to get interesting. Let's put it that way. And actually, if you're going to get knocked off here in a little, you may get knocked off. I'm just going to say that because right now my switchboard's kind of acting up. So make sure you call back 646-381-4990. If you do, I see some people didn't get knocked off. Some people did. You have 7 minutes left, so you have time to get in there. Hopefully it doesn't affect the last part of the show here. But either way, just looking at some other news out there, we talked about the Golovkin-Macklin fight. It sounds like it's going to be on HBO June 29th, triple header from the East Coast someplace. A couple cards I just want to talk about and mention, and then maybe, you know, go to the callers and see which one of the fights really stand out to them and you know, just as fans, what they would like to see. Leo Santa Cruz finally got an opponent. He's been looking around for a little bit. He's a veteran guy, Alexander Munoz. It'll probably be, I assume, the second fight on the pay-per-view for Mayweather and Guerrero from Showtime May 4th. Now that whole card's set and ready to go. Munoz is a guy that, he's definitely not a world beater. He's a tough veteran guy. He's been in there with some solid guys. He just doesn't always get the win. He's never been knocked out. This fight is, you know, he's coming up in weight. Both of them are coming up in weight, though. I will say that. But, then, you know, 122 right now is not Munoz's weight. I think they're just making sure Leo Santa Cruz is going to be good to go at this weight. You look at this fight and you say, well, it's not a great fight as far as matchup at this weight. I mean, Alexander Munoz, who does he beat? You know, and I get that. I get that. The one thing I'll say is, stylistically, I believe it would be a fun fight to watch. And when it comes to pay-per-view undercards, you know, as far as matching up fights that need to happen or should happen or on paper, legitimate fights, people that go, yeah, it's a legitimate fight. Obviously, those legitimate fights can be saved. You know, it's great to have legitimate fights that mean a lot at the weight class on an undercard of a pay-per-view. It is great.
It's phenomenal. But it just doesn't happen that much, let's be honest. And usually, you know, here's an example. Ishae Smith versus K-9, right? A fight that on paper looked just fine. Didn't have too many complaints as far as, is it a worthy fight? Is it a huge stretch? Is it a mismatch? Nothing like that. But you knew it wasn't going to be that pretty. It picked up later, but it was ugly. It had a lot of ugly moments, you know? Sometimes the fights that need to happen aren't always stylistically the best. So maybe they can be saved for other cards as well, co-features and main events, triple headers and like that. But this type of fight is just sheer entertainment. Of course, they got to look out for Leo Santa Cruz jumping up in weight. He has some issues making, you know, his 118. He's going to 122. Like I said, neither of them have done anything really, anything at this weight class, obviously. They're just entering it. So I think it's a great fight on paper. Like, oh, man, this really means a lot. It's a step-up fight. No, no. But it'll be entertaining. And I think that the entertainment value is what you look for on a pay-per-view. Obviously, as a boxing fan, I look for the best fights that need to happen and mean something at a weight class. I get that. But, you know, but it is what it is, and that's what we're looking at for that. I like the other three fights a lot. I'm not crazy about this opponent. I get it. I totally get it, but, you know, it is what it is. It's not that bad, and you know what? If it's entertaining, well, you're paying some money for this card, so at least you'll be entertained. I guess that's the way I look at it with this fight, because three out of the other four fights are pretty damn solid. That's the way I look at it. So, you know, like you said, is it a great fight? No. But I think it'll be fun to watch, and I'm interested to see what they will do with Leo Santa Cruz here in the near future. But it looks like it's entertaining undercard regardless. I really believe that. I think it'll be fun to watch. A couple other fights, then I'll go to the callers and see which of these fights are really sticking out. Arislandi Lara and Alfredo Angulo on the undercard of Jose Cito Lopez and Marcus Maidana, the co-feature. This is June 8th. Arislandi Lara against Angulo. It's a fight that a lot of people wanted to see for the last couple years. A lot of, you know, Arislandi Lara has been that guy looking on the outside, trying to get in. He beat Paul Williams, got robbed. You know, some people think he got somewhat of a gift. Maybe not a gift because it was a tight fight, but some people thought Carlos Molina beat him, you know, straight up. He got a draw in his, you know, the Vanes Montarosian fight. So I like this fight a lot. I think it needs to happen. I thought they'd be a little more slow, I guess you could say, with Angulo. I didn't think they'd put him in with Arislandi Lara, but now Arislandi Lara has shown some weakness as well. So I like the fight a lot. I think it's an intriguing fight. Another couple fights, and then, like I said, I'll go to the callers here. Berto versus Jesus Soto Carras, which I love as far as just action. That'll be a fun fight to watch. And also Keith Thurman, unbeaten, going against another unbeaten guy who has an intern WBA belt at 147, Diego Chavez. Or Chavez. I think it is 22-0. And Gary Russell will also be on that card. It sounds like sometime in July, they're looking at July 20th or 27th. They said California, they said Florida, they said New York. They don't really know exactly where they're going to put it, but Berto and Soto Carras is a fun fight. And then you got two unbeaten guys. Gary Russell hopefully gets on there against a good, solid guy. I like that triple header a lot. Martinez, although he's got to take care of Murray, he's shown to be pretty solid. He's talking about Daniel Gill and maybe Golovkin even maybe after that. He's talking about Daniel Gill. I wouldn't doubt if Daniel Gill gets that fight if he were to get by Murray and all that. Carcino, man, just talking about some of those fights, Berto's got a chance to go against a brawler and get back to some of, you know, his skills, using his skills rather than brawling. But then again, Berto likes to brawl. That might be an interesting fight because Soto Carras is not a chump. He can be outboxed, but you got to keep him off you. some of those fights I mentioned, what do you think of some of those fights? Obviously, the Leo Santa Cruz, a lot of people were thinking of a bigger opponent. It is what it is, but there's some fights. That Angulo-Arislandi Lara fight, although I think Arislandi Lara can outbox him, that surprised me right back to that. What are your thoughts on some of those fights, Garcino?
Before I go into that, I just wanted to say, you know, Hollywood 09 comes on the show a couple of times. Just a couple of nights ago, his father had passed away in his sleep. So, you know, whatever faith or religion you are, you know, just send some prayers to him or go on his Twitter, @Hollywood009, and leave him some nice comments. Cause, you know, that's really hard. It just happened out of the blue. So, you know, he normally would probably be on the night.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, if anybody wants to do that, they can. But that's why you probably not. Well, I know that's why you're not hearing him on the show tonight. You know, he normally calls up. He's very energetic. But I just wanted to let everybody know that before we, you know, went into the archive time. And now, which fights? You talking about the Berto Carras fight, right?
Yeah, that or any of the other fights, the Lara Angulo, some of the other fights that have been made that kind of interested me just from a stylistic standpoint.
Okay, well, from a standpoint, I don't know why people, they down Berto so much. It's like I've seen worse from a lot other fighters, but why would they hate Andre Berto? I'm like, this guy at least takes these tough fights. I'm like, he's in these fights with all the tough fighters that I see. He's in there with Ortiz, he's fighting Guerrero. I'm like, they act like he just went in there and got his brains beat. He fought back with two eyes that was almost completely shut. And everybody acts like he's the worst fighter in the world. And then they're like, oh, and Soto Carras. Soto Carras is a tough fighter. That is a tough fight. He's gritty. I mean, he will smother you. And this is something, if you're Andre Berto, he has had problems with. What's his name? Luis Collazo was the one to first really bully him in the ring. You know, and everybody since then has used that formula against him. He's going to have to overcome that. And against Soto Carras, he's gonna try to do the same thing. He's going to go to Berto's body. He's going to try to bully him. So Andre Berto's going to have to step up and show that he can deal with that. And he's going to have a new trainer, and a lot of people believe he's going to be Virgil Hunter. He's moved to California now, so we don't know what's going to happen like with Berto and what he's going to look like. But that should be interesting. And then going into you said the other matchups they had penciled in with Eric Landolora against Angulo. I just think that this is a bad matchup for Angulo, but if you want to be big time, these are the fights we got to win. But I don't think he'll be able to use his bullying tactics on Laura. I think his play is right into his hands. Laura's a little too slick for him, and he won't be able to find him, arrange him, and I think he could smother anything that he wants to do. A lot of people probably won't appreciate how the fight would look. There's going to probably be a lot of grappling, a lot of complaining, a lot of pushing, but I think he's just too much skill set and speed on Lara's end to offset anything that Angulo wants to do. But, yeah, we got some interesting fights coming up, too. Because now they're going to also have Keith Thurman is coming back, and he's going to be on that Berto card, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he's fighting, I mentioned a little bit against the unbeaten guy.
Right, against Diego Chavez. Then Gary Russell's going to fight on that card, too, but we don't know who Gary Russell's fighting yet. But
right.
He's going to be on there. Showtime's rolling out a triple hitter. And then you got the Zab Judah fight with Danny Garcia coming up with Kell Brook and Devin Alexander on that card. I mean, Showtime, everybody was talking about HBO's lineup. Showtime is coming to empty the guns with fights. So I was like, yeah, well, this is a great run right now for HBO, and Showtime's going to have fights. The only thing, the fans are going to be full. We're going to be fed real full. Our bellies are going to be full with fights.
That's one thing about the boxing fan, man. They're always hungry, and we can always get seconds and dessert and leftovers and wrap that shit up, you know, and tinfoil and all that, man, because that's the one thing, man. We talked last week about the Showtime and HBO, but this is the type of thing that's going to happen. I mean, they're going to go, all right, well, I guess we're going to have to do more triple headers than double headers than HBO. And they're going to set up good fights because both HBO and Showtime, obviously, and Golden Boy, you know, Golden Boy top rank, they know. This is going to be talked about a lot, even more now in the press because of the strained relationship with HBO and Golden Boy. So, to me, I think this, it has it's going to have its problems, and I think it does, it's going to cause us from seeing fights. We've already seen Bob Arum kind of go back out there with what he expects if Nonito gets by, which, you know, a lot of people think he'll get by Rigging Diao, but he already put his terms down for Mahrez. That fight's not going to happen. So, you know, I mean, obviously I think HBO definitely has an advantage because they have Bob Arum in top rank, and they have other promoters. It's not like they're just, you know, Showtime. They have to sit all this Golden Boy stuff, and then how much will they go with the other fighters, you know, and other promoters? Not necessarily other fighters, but, you know, other promoters. So this type of thing, it gives us an advantage on, that's for sure. But we'll see if that damages it. But these type of fights, man, I mean, they're really starting to put some cards together. And you know, that's great. And you know, like Garcia said, because we're hungry. We're always hungry. We can keep you know, eating. There's no doubt about that. You know, actually, I want to hear what 626 has to say. Make sure, you know, give out your Twitter handle and all that, and you know, you can tell that you're definitely a hardcore boxing fan, so people can follow you and talk boxing with you, 626. But what do you think of a fight with Andre Berto and Jesus Soto Carras? You know, you mentioned Alvarado with that, you know, that shoulder roll. Well, Berto, you know, you mentioned that as well. He tried to add a shoulder roll all late, and his inside game is a mess. He's a good, skillful fighter, and I do think people are down on him too much because of some of the easy showcase fights that he got early in his career on HBO and how he got his title. But win, lose, or draw, the guy gives us fights. What do you think of him going right back in with Soto Carras, who's going to pressure him, try to get on the inside? What do you think of that fight, 626?
It's going to be an exciting fight with Berto. I just haven't seen any improvements on him. He just, ever since he became champion, like, I don't know, I think his jab needs more work. He has hand speed, but he's too much of a headhunter. It's going to be interesting because Soto Carras looked impressive against Sal Cook Aiden. He was using his jab. I was surprised by that fight. I was expecting Aiden to knock him out, to be honest, especially coming off the loss of Maidana. So I think Berto will pull it off like in a close decision, probably like a 8-4, 7-5. I expect Carras to come on late, test him, see. What I want to see from him is just more, something different, more improvement.
Yeah, well said. I like that a lot. And Carras, you know, as funny as it is to say, but Carras gets himself into more issues than he has to, too. He obviously is going to come forward and brawl in this fight, but he's got a jab. He actually has more skill than people do give him credit for. I will say that. I definitely will say that. And you know, I just love Soto Carras, man. He's just a guy that can get hit with, like, How many punches did Mike Jones hit him with that first fight? Like 60 straight punches or whatever? I think he literally landed like 50 or 60. Maybe I'm going overboard. Maybe it was only 40. But he, it seemed like he hit him with everything in the book early in that fight. I want to say second round, but earlier in that fight for sure. And then so did Cross. Came back. I mean, he looked pretty hurt to me. Came back and got a draw out of that fight against Mike Jones. Now, later, Mike Jones, Bailey, gave him the snot blood bustle, you know, bubbles and all that. He knocked him out. But I like that fight. I think it's a risk for Berto because of, you know, the style he fights with. In 66, said it perfectly. He just doesn't, you don't see the improvement. You don't see the improvement in him. And that's something that you wonder, switching trainers, you know, if that's going to be the difference. He's going to be tested. There's no doubt about that. You know, just a couple more topics, then we'll get out of here. Lamont Peterson last week, man, the press, a couple members of the press, this happens, I mean, ever since the internet started blowing up, this is the type of stuff that we're dealing with, folks. I mean, it is what it is. Obviously, you know, last week, Lamont Peterson failed a drug test. That's what was said, you know, off the internet. It spread like wildfire. And obviously, I mean, to hear that, I was like, wow, man, really? Like, God, Lamont, what is wrong with you? You know, I got to say, I was affected. I was affected by it because it's like, dude, come on. Like, what is wrong with you? You just got a chance to get back at a nice, you know, a very, very nice performance against, what's his toes? Holt, Kendall Holt. And then you do this, you know? And the way, it was just really weird the way it was reported. And obviously there was, you know, obviously they were, there was some issue, you know? There were definitely a lot of issues as far as how it came out. And Kendall Holt was denied the first time around to actually see the all the way results, but there was some confusion. I'm not going to say that, but to me, for Lamont Peterson to come out of that the other way, that it actually was negative and he didn't test positive for anything, and then they started looking at Ken Holt like, actually, he may have messed up. It just, the whole situation was really weird how the commission kept the test and didn't release it, but then they kind of released it with emails saying, you're good to go, and then, well, let's see the actual results. You know, show me the results on paper. And I'll tell you what, it was ridiculous. And I'm so glad, as long as that's the way it actually turns out. One, because I'm a boxing fan. I got to admit, I do like Peterson. I like his style. I like his backstory. He's been in some fun fights. I think it was nonsense for him not to tell people that he put a testosterone pill, be it soy-based or not, whatever. If it was soy-based, he could have told them that you put it in your hip. I'm not going to get too bent out of shape. We've already been down that road. But for him to come back, have a great performance, and then get this Matisse fight, Matisse and Peterson, that could be the fight of the year right there. It means a whole lot. Winner probably gets Danny Garcia. You know, it's a big, big fight. So I just couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, dude. I mean, I guess I could believe it, too, because, you know, he's already been had an issue once. But, man, I got to say, as a boxing fan, I didn't want that to happen. And, I didn't want that fight to be off because I'm really looking forward to that Peterson and Matisse fight. So it turned out that he actually was okay. He didn't fail it. But just the way, you know, it got released and all that, I thought that was pretty ridiculous. Pretty ridiculous. Don't get me wrong. There is a lot of random stuff behind the story. I get why people were suspicious and sides were suspicious. But it was just a little, I don't know. You know what I mean? A little strange. What else do we got? I wanted to say one more thing here to cover a story, and I can't remember. Let me look at my notes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, just a reminder for all the hardcore fans out there. And, you know, some people really like to watch boxing, amateur boxing, I should say. Some people like watching boxing, as I just said. That was wrong with me. Now, of course, people like to watch boxing. That's what everybody's, you know, talking about and listening. That's what I do the show for. But you can definitely keep updated at several sites. Boxing Scene does a pretty good job as well. And at the U.S. Boxing website as well. But U.S. Boxing Championships going on. Something to keep posted. Obviously, some new rules for elite tournaments in the Olympics with the you know, 10-point must system, scoring system, which I think will help. And also the headgear, taking off the headgear. So it's kind of interesting. We saw that with the World Series of Boxing. Kind of interesting to see. I thought it was really fun to see, them without headgear. I don't know. You know, we've had boxers and trainers, and I like to talk to trainers more about this. And they said, you know, especially here, U.S. and Mexico, don't do great in the Olympics anymore, but they produce the pros. You know, so the pro style and go into the body in a short fight, not really needed or scored, getting an early lead and then sitting on it, that type of thing, I think some of that will be eliminated a little better anyway. I think it's going to be five. I believe it's five judges. I couldn't get that wrong. But, I something to just think about and follow, of course. Definitely check it out and follow it. And you can see, you know, the young stars for tomorrow and whatnot. Not a whole lot more that I'm going to talk about. There was a fight over there in Liverpool. Tony Bellew fought to a draw against Chalimba. And, you know, this Tony dude over there, man, they've been talking big about him. And they expect a lot from him, but he just doesn't seem to, I don't know, I'm not saying, oh, boy, he's a bum who he fought by any stretch. I'm not saying that, but you're going to take over something, you might want to be able to win the fight. You know, you might want to be able to get through that. So, obviously, wasn't the outcome they expected there in Liverpool, England. Another fight, just a quick little fight. This is what I was going to mention, too. Heavyweight prospect, I'm reading this right off of ESPN.com. Deontay Wilder, he was obviously the last men's medalist, bronze medalist in 2008. He's going against another medalist, this time gold medalist in 2000 for the British team, Ali Harrison. Harrison is coming back. You know, he's been around. He's 31 and I think he's like, let me see here. It probably says in the article. Yeah, 31-6, 23 KOs. Never lived up to his lofty expectation, of course. Boy, though, 6'5", 240, going against 6'7", 225. It'll be in England on the undercard of the Amir Khan and Julio Diaz fight. So that kind of makes sense. You know, Harrison, just no matter how many times he loses, no matter how many times he just hasn't looked good, he just keeps getting fights. He's getting more fights and more fights. So it is what it is. I think he's, you know, they were going to say they were going to step up Wilder to a position. I thought it was a little too high of a step up, to be honest with you. I think that this is a perfect step up for him and then keep stepping up after that. There is, just to talk about, you know, some fights going on Thursday night in New York City. Yo-Yo Don is there, Jojo Don against Damian Fias, and also Luis Orlandito Del Valle is going to come back as a featherweight. He is a featherweight, 122, 126, both. Also, Gabriel Bracero is going to be on that, Yuri Foreman. So look for that, no doubt about it. Broadway Boxing, I believe that card is. Also from California, ESPN2 and ESPN Deportes will have a card as well. Of course, HBO2, big, you know, pro debut for a Chinese fighter. He was a gold medalist, two-time gold medalist, I believe, Zhu Shiming.
He's fighting a four-rounder. He's a junior flyweight. Good undercard, though. Wilfredo Vasquez Jr. is fighting a Japanese fighter on that card. You check that out, too. It should be a pretty good fight card, I think. Domer from Puerto Rico is fighting Ivan Hernandez in a junior weight, junior welterweight, excuse me, fight. And in Japan, I believe it will be Sunday and Monday, Japan has some fights going on. Osaka is on April 7th, and then from Tokyo as well, some fights there. A bantamweight title fight, that'll be the April 7th one, and then another bantamweight title fight, and a flyweight title fight. And actually, now that I'm looking at the card, junior lightweight as well, so some good fights from Japan as well, something you can stream. Maybe the hardcores will you know, let people in on some streams from Japan and whatnot. So a busy fight weekend, and last week was a pretty big busy fight weekend considering, here in America anyway, the basketball tournament, you know, the NCAA college basketball tournament. So I was pretty happy that that we still had a busy fight card. Sometimes this area of the year can be kind of slow until the next couple weeks when that's done. So, you know, not much more to talk about. 626, man, you got anything, any last words or maybe something I brought up or maybe something that you wanted to say before? Any of these other fights you want to talk about? Anything you want to say before we get out of here, 626?
Well, as far as this weekend's fight, I think the most